Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night.
With Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On TalkSport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast from TalkSport. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure as always to be in your company. But if this is the first time that you've come to us for your boxing content, then please hit subscribe. You can do it on iTunes. You can do it on the TalkSport website if you need an Android feed. We're across everything. It's all there for you and you'll never miss out on any of our Fight Sports content. Now, as you know, every single Saturday night, we bring you a stellar guest list. The who's who's of the Fight Sports world comes to join us to talk about everything that's going on in their world. And every now and again, we get some exclusive news. There's some coming up a little bit later on in the show, so make sure you stick around for it. First guest on the podcast this week is, of course, the Hall of Fame promoter himself, the one and only Mr. Frank Warren. Gareth caught up with him, spoke about a load of stuff, but he started the conversation on that, let's just say, unusual press conference that happened this week between the Furies and Jake Paul.
The problem was I was supposed to be there, and Tyson had the flu, weren't going to be there. So I didn't want to, I didn't want to go up there if they had the flu. And then they called me. He called me in the morning saying he was okay. But by then, there's no way I could be getting in a car and driving up to Morecambe and back. Because as I said earlier, I had a problem. Well, I had this operation on my back, so I was going up by train, but it was too late to get to the station. So. If I'd have been there, it wouldn't have been, this stuff wouldn't happen. As regarding what, what Hearn said, I couldn't hear what Jake Paul was saying because I got in the conference on a Zoom call, and I couldn't hear him at all. But I heard some of the other stuff that went down, and it was, it was a great shame, and it was stupid, and I think BT put an apology out regarding the language and some of the things that were said because they are not acceptable. I don't need Hearn or anybody being sympathetic or allegedly be sympathetic. I mean, I don't really care what he says. The most important thing is that doesn't happen again because it's not acceptable.
Look, Tommy's got a proper boxing career ahead of him. He drew fame from being Love Island. Everyone enjoyed the love affair, the love story with Molly May. He's a lovely kid. We both remember him from years back around Tyson. He's always been there. He's kind of like a physical Adonis now. He's fighting at light heavyweight. How do you see this fight with Jake Paul in America? Is it a great platform for him? And obviously it's a great payday, but does it help his boxing career and help elevate him in America as well?
Well, for me, the facts are it's two novices fighting. And they obviously, as far as Jake Paul's concerned, he's made a massive name for himself through his social media followings and so forth. He's had four fights now. I see his last one live. And Tommy, you just said what he said. He also is a novice. But this fight's over 8 rounds. It's two guys who've got big social media followings. It is what it is. For Tommy, from my perspective, he wanted to fight, and how am I to stop the fight from stopping him from earning unbelievable money, which we've negotiated for him?
and it's a fight I feel he should win. If he doesn't win it, then I'll probably be the most shocked beside him in the venue. But it is what it is. It's not what I grew up with. It's not the type of thing that I thought would ever be sort of catching on the way it has done. I mean, the last show when I was out there, when Tommy fought on Jake Paul's undercard, and Danny Dubois fought as well on the card. When we got there, it was about 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, and the place was absolutely full up. It full to the rafters. And they were all everybody there, which was a pretty fairly young audience. They were totally engaged with every fight. You know, when we normally put shows on here or anywhere, for that matter, around the world, you know, you got to wait until just before the semi event, probably around sort of 10 o'clock at night, sort of 9:30, before the place absolutely gets full up. But they were there from the start to the finish, engaged and watched it. So it has, without a doubt, brought a new audience. And I think that obviously helps boxing, because you obviously, from my perspective, you had Tommy got a showcasing on there. That's why this fight's been made. And as far as Daniel Dubois was concerned, he got tremendous exposure, massive exposure out there. It's on Showtime pay-per-view. And Jake Paul's, I think he's the second highest grossing boxer in America at the moment on pay-per-view. So for a fight, probably had four or five fights, whatever he's had, that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes his name in America, makes things easier. I know it's a different route, and you're very old school about the way you grow boxers and you bring them through. But you can't knock it in terms of, like you say, he should win.
And he's earning life-changing money for it. So good luck to him. God bless him.
Well, we have a big bout next weekend, of course. We're there with TalkSport Live at the Copper Box. Lyndon Arthur and Anthony Yard. Very excited about that.
I am. I think it's an even money fight. It's really done well as far as the ticket's concerned, so it can be a great atmosphere. It's a rematch from their first fight that took place when the COVID restrictions were on. That was a fight in the studio. And it was a good fight, but it didn't quite catch a light. But I think this one will do. There's so much more at stake now. The fact that Lyndon ranked number one is the mandatory challenger for the WBO. So Anthony will be trying to, if he can, jump in his shoes. Lyndon obviously doesn't, you know, be looking to make sure that he keeps that position, because the winner of the fight will definitely fight the winner of Joe Smith and Callum Johnson, which is a fight I've made with Bob Barron, the top rank I'll promote early in the new year. So there's a lot at stake for these guys.
In that fight, Callum Johnson, Joe Smith Jr., obviously Joe Smith Jr. being the WBO champion at the moment, Callum's got a great chance against this guy, hasn't he?
Well, he has, and it's one of those fights. He won't go the distance, I don't believe. But I think for the first sort of five, six rounds, it's going to be an absolute war of attrition. That's what happened in this fight. It won't go the distance. And I think Callum's got the punch, and he's obviously, we've seen him in action quite a few times lately. And he also fought for the world title against, is it Bivitol? About 18 months.
He knocked him down, didn't he?
He knocked him down, and he's an outstanding world champion. So, he's capable of doing that. So I think it's going to be very exciting, and hopefully he comes through, and then we get an all British WBO championship.
And also, of course, that light heavyweight division in Britain at the moment is extraordinary, and a great performance by Dan Aziz last weekend as well, who puts himself in the mix as well as amongst the Boatsies and Callum Smith. It's a really vibrant division, isn't it? Particularly in the UK at the moment.
It is. It's like our heavyweight scene. It is very much so. So, but our guys are in really in good positions now, and we've done a good job for them. So it's now time for all of them to try and the opportunity that we've delivered to them to come through and show who's the best. And then who knows, maybe we might get the winner in with at the winner from our end in with with a Buatsi. We'll see.
We mentioned Tyson Fury at the top of the chat. What's the current situation? I mean, I did speak to you in the week, and you said that obviously you want to try and make a fight for Tyson as soon as possible. I know that you've poo-pooed this idea of 60-40 split that's come forward for Dillian White. Is it White? Is it Joyce? Is it another? Is it going to be in the UK? Is it going to be in America? From what you were saying to me in the week, that Tyson wants to get into camp in the new year and he wants a fight in early March, and you're going to get that fight for him, basically, either a voluntary, it will be, we understand, a voluntary defence of the WBC title.
Well, what will happen is, Tyson, I believe next week all this is going to all come to a head, and I believe we'll be announcing Tyson's next fight and opponent. In an ideal world, I think I mentioned to you before, the one I'd like to see him in the ring with is with Usyk. I'd like to see Joshua step aside to allow that to happen. And who knows, maybe he may do that, but we'll find out. And if he doesn't, then obviously Tyson will be fighting someone else. But that's what I would like to see happen. And everybody's working on it to try and see if we can get it over the line.
So that would mean that Joshua steps aside and fights the winner, presumably?
Well, if he decides he will step aside. And for me, if I was him, it's a no-brainer because, it's no certainty he'll beat Usyk. The one thing's for sure, if Tyson fights Usyk, is that Joshua will fight for the four belts against the winner.
Yeah. And you favour Tyson Fury very strongly, I imagine, against Alexander Usyk.
Yeah, I would do. I mean, they're similar styles. They're very similar in what they do, but the difference being Tyson's a much, much, much bigger man, and I think he will win the fight.
If that doesn't happen, Usyk and Fury, is there a chance? And White doesn't happen. Is there a chance that Joe Joyce could get his opportunity at a go at the WBC belt? I mean, he is highly ranked at the moment. I mean, he's number three in the rankings for the WBC title.
He's number two now in the latest rankings. He's number two and he's number one in the WBO. So, that's another option. Joe's there. I mean, he'd fight anybody at a moment's notice. He's in serious training at the moment in the States, hoping that we can pull this off. But if we can't, then he will fight early in the new year, probably sometime in February. And we're working on his opponent.
Fascinating stuff. And we can't wait to find out what Tyson Fury, of course, is doing next. And as you know, and as everybody knows, when he's active and he's in camp, everything goes well for him. And he stays on course the whole time. And that fitness, that mental health is always good. It's a year, Frank. I don't know if you realise this. It doesn't seem a year ago that Joe Joyce put in a brilliant performance against Daniel Dubois. They're both your fighters, of course. What about Daniel in the last year? Do you feel that he's got everything back when you speak to...
He fought on that show. He's come back with a couple of wins and in fact is now ranked number one and is the mandatory by the WBA. So he's in an excellent place. So, our heavyweight roster at Queensbury is we've got the best heavyweights in the world. We've got the best heavyweight in Tyson and the two next guys coming through are both with us as well. They're both in fabulous positions, both ranked respectively by the different organisations, the BAMBO. So they're going to be in the mix. So if Tyson, for example, was to fight an Usyk or to fight a Joshua, by the time those fights happen, these guys, these mandatories will be called. So they're in a really good spot. And we worked hard to get them there. And again with Daniel, he was hopefully going to be on the undercard of that fight on Tommy's show, giving him some valuable exposure in the States. But unfortunately, various reasons, he couldn't get there. So now he also will fight in mid-February. So he's going to be out too. So it's quite a lively time there.
Absolutely. We can't wait to be with you next weekend at the Copper Box in the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park. Of course, in East London, Lyndon Arthur against Anthony Yard. I was with Bradley Skeet in Sheffield last night. I was working a little show, Unified Promotions, three women and two men in a little hotel up in Sheffield last night. That was great fun. But I saw Bradley Skeet up. Obviously, he's fighting Hamza Shiraz, World Boxing Organization European Super Welterweight title. Bradley looked in phenomenal shape. It's a great card, that Dennis McCann on there, of course. One of your young rising stars at bantamweight, 10-0. It's going to be a great card next week.
Well, it is. And, you know, Hamza, I really like him. He's a bit of a freak in as far as his size, at all he is and range he is. But he's in with Bradley, who was basically most of his career was with me. He's fighting him. That's a tough, tough fight. And we'll get a measure of where Hamza is at this stage. But Bradley's, you know, he's going to be very dangerous. That is a good fight. I'm really looking forward to that. And as you mentioned, young Dennis, he was supposed to fight a couple of months ago, but he had bad flu, so he's jumping at the bit to get in there, end the year well, and set himself up for some title fights next year.
And I'm fascinated. I haven't seen him before. He's 1-0. We've got Sonny Liston Ali first on the card against Lee Hallett. Sonny Liston Ali, that his parents were clearly boxing fans.
Well, one thing's for sure, he better be able to fight with a name like that, or he's going to be in trouble.
Now, one of the fights that Frank was speaking about in that conversation with Gareth was, of course, upcoming this weekend, the rematch between Lyndon Arthur and Anthony Yard. And the latter joined me on the show to preview the fight.
And the round is down from the identical same punch, just trying to suck in the air, got the head between his knees. He's not going to make it this time. And referee John Latham just waves his arms to signal that that is the end of the fight. And Thuran has been put away inside a round. Anthony Yard just trapped him at a little right to the solar plexus, into the pit of the stomach, and then saw the gap for that left hand again.
The corrections will be shown on December 4th. And I just feel like you're going to see me back to being myself again, maybe even a bit better. There was a lot going on in the first fight. I'm not a person that makes no excuses. That's why I haven't said nothing. I just said the rematch is going to happen. And now we've got the date. It's not far away now. December 4th. Tune in.
A bit of back and forth with the negotiations on it, weren't there? Because I got told originally that you guys were looking at October, and then it got pushed a little bit. We had a few opponents in between getting this rematch on. Was it a frustrating time trying to get this on? Because I know that you wanted it immediately.
Yeah, it wasn't. I wouldn't say frustrating. They did, him and his team, they didn't want the rematch. And again, it kept going back and forth. I just stayed out of it because I'm like, that's not my field. There's nothing I could do about it. All I can do is complain. And I'm not really a complainer. So I just stayed patient because there was a contract. And they just didn't want the fight. They tried to go around it. They even went publicly and were saying that they want to go other routes and we should fight again after one of us would win a world title, et cetera, et cetera. When that wasn't in the agreement. So... But the fight's here now, so I'm looking forward to it.
The fight is here, and I think everybody's looking forward to it, mate, because it feels, I don't know whether you would agree with this, but it feels like there's more on the line this time. There was a lot on the line last time, no doubt about that, but it feels bigger this time around, mate.
Definitely, definitely. And I feel like sometimes that's the climax of boxing. You know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know how things are going to plan out. But, you know, the first fight, again, it was very, very boring. So if people are expecting it to be a similar fight or the same fight, it's just absolutely not. Absolutely not. So
I think it's impossible to be a similar fight. Like I said, one of the first thing that I said to you about the fans, every fighter feeds off adrenaline. They feed off it. You know, I mean, you're a guy that obviously does the big ring walks. I see you touching hands with everybody as you walk, making your way, and you've always got a big smile on your face as you're making that ring walk. And it seems to me that that's when you get switched on for a particular fight. And I'm sure Lyndon's similar, you know? So therefore, it can't be the same fight that we saw the first time round. It has to go at a quicker pace.
Spot on. It's literally spot on. The thing about boxing is, you know, when you're in a boxing gym and you spar When you're sparring, it's like a lot of practicing that goes on. Mm. And for me, that's what kind of happened to me. I ended up, not only wasn't I there mentally anyway, but that's literally how it felt. Like I was sparring. Even when I fought Dex Bowman, it felt like I was sparring. When there's nobody there, it's like, who am I entertaining? Mm. You get into that mindset of working on things. And that's what happened in that last fight. I'm not the person that makes excuses or says anything that don't benefit me. And, you know, when I watched the fight back, I fought terribly. It wasn't how I fight even. When I watch it back, I will still say, you know, it was close. You know, initially, straight after the fight, I said, I don't want to scream robbery. I didn't say it was a word robbery. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't want to say the word robbery, etc. Because, you know, your emotions are how things go through your head. But when I watched it back, I was like, this was a lot closer than I thought it was. Mm. You know, I can see by perspective, it looks like he's keeping me at bay. It looks like what he's doing is like stopping me from doing certain things. So I can see why they gave him that round, etc.
Yeah.
I just analyzed the situation, analyzed the fight. And, you know, one of the judges gave it to me by 5 rounds. And then 2 of the other judges gave it to him by 1 round. So it's perspective. But that's again, in my mind, I'll take that into this fight.
At the time of the defeat to Lyndon, you are an active man on social media. You will have seen people going at it. So say every armchair fan has a suggestion, don't they, after the defeat? And I'm sure AJ is going through this as well right now, because I've seen so much on him and his trainer relationship. Did you feel any pressure at the time to have a total change? Or was it just like you've just said there, just one little bit that you just needed to add to it?
For me, it was that me and my team needed to reassess. That was it, really. I'm active on social media, but you'll be surprised how inactive I am at looking at comments, looking at Instagram DMs. Mm-hmm. I just stopped because, you know, there was a situation that happened one time, and, you know, people, they try and wind you up, and people are forgetting that I grew up in East London. I grew up in East London, and I grew up a certain type of way, so... I've still got a bit of, you know, something in me that's, you know, you try to purify. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just like everybody, you know, everyone's got limits and boundaries that can be pushed, etc. So I realized to myself, you know, once something's actually affecting me or it's getting a reaction out of me, I just leave it alone. You know, it's not beneficial to my future. The feedback, should I say, from what the public was saying was coming from people that know me. Mm. So when they were seeing me, they were telling me certain things. Some of them I said, this ain't the time. Some of them I said, I don't want to hear it. And then some of them I said, oh yeah, so what else are people saying? And they explained it to me in a way where I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then they gave me their opinions as well. I even gave my opinion. So, but before anyone was saying anything, I was saying that my team needs to reassess. Myself, individually, and everyone around me need to reassess. So it ended up being fantastic.
Mate, very level-headed approach to it. I mean, a lot of people can like you say, in the heat of the moment, then when the emotions are going high, you can make a decision that maybe a bit snap. Very level-headed way of approaching it. What have you made of Tunde and Pat? Are they on the undercard, by the way? Are they? Have we arranged the fight between them two? Have we put them on the undercard? They seem to be going at it in the presser.
I feel that Tunde hasn't really engaged in it because, you know, we said what we wanted to say at the press conference. This is meant to be. Two professionals, myself and Lyndon, going into a boxing ring and meant to be two professional coaches as well. Yes, it's built up for the fight. Me and Pat spoke again after the press conference, and I don't know what he said since then, but, you know, he did kind of look at himself and say, I shouldn't have went about it that way, etc., etc., etc. Because it's bigger than, you know, egos. It's bigger than just selling a fight. It's the way you sell a fight. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So the way they were talking, or the way mostly Pat was talking, I had to give him a man-to-man talk and say, look, you're a lot older than me. You know, you looked after Lyndon. You know, you took him off of the wrong path.
Yeah.
Except, so you're meant to keep that energy.
As I said earlier on, it feels like there's a lot more on this particular fight than there was on the first fight. And I can kind of blow this up a little bit further because we kind of know now that Callum Johnson's getting an opportunity at a shot of a world title against Joe Smith Jr. This is a fight that will be highly ranked with the WBO. you can't see me, but I can see you smiling right now. So therefore, you know the ramifications of this fight. You come through, you win in style. You would think whatever happens in the Smith-Johnson fight with Frank's connections to that particular fight, you would then be next in line at the start of next year, first quarter of next year, to be fighting for a world title once again.
Yes. I know you see me smiling because my dreams and aspirations have always been to be world champion and take over the division, even with the limited experience I've got. It's just my mentality, but that's actually not my focus. I just wish Callum, he's a fellow British fighter.
Yeah.
So I wish him nothing but the best. Just like when I've seen other British fighters fight for world titles, when I saw Craig Richards, you know, fight Bivol. I know Craig as well very well. Mm-hmm. We used to be in the same stable. I wish him nothing but the best. I was praying that he won. But again, that's not my focus, man. My focus is, you know, next week Saturday and next week Saturday only.
How good is the British light heavyweight scene right now? We saw Dan Aziz last week, didn't we? Become champion, beating Jose Abetin. There's a lot of big names and a big fights there, mate, isn't there?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And again, these are, we all grew up together, man. It's almost emotional when you see it. Me and Dan was talking yesterday, and I'm just so happy for him. You know, he came up. Everyone's gone their own journeys.
Yeah.
Everyone's come up the way they have, and when I say we all came up together, meaning, you know, when I was in a boxing gym in TKO training with Tony Cece, Dan Aziz came, me and Dan Aziz sparred. Even Lawrence Okoli was there, we sparred. So many people, Craig Richards, me and him used to spar every day, every single day when we was just getting ready to turn professional. So, you know, everyone goes in their paths, but it's the grind and the, look what everyone's doing now. You know, everyone's professionals, everyone's doing very well. It's amazing, you know. It's very rare that you see a group of boys come from nothing. Because literally, each and every one of us have come from nothing. Come from nothing can build themselves up to be something. You know, I feel like that's inspiration in itself.
Now, that fight, of course, is live on TalkSport at the weekend. So make sure you come and join us for that. Now, over the Christmas period, Triple G is back in action, taking on Ryota Murata. In the middleweight division over in Japan. And I'd say something, Gareth A. Davis knows all the biggest stars in this game because he caught up with Gennady and his trainer earlier this week.
Just tell me what you feel about Murata, what kind of style you're facing. We know about your abilities to box. What are the issues? What are the strengths that this guy brings that you have to be very wary of?
Of course, it's difficult to talk about strong and like weak sides of an opponent before you fight. Of course, we'll see when we get to the ring. But I'm concentrating on his strong points. He's a former Olympic champion. He is the world champion. He's a super world champion currently. He's a national hero for his country of Japan. And in the middleweight, he's the only boxer of this level. In fact, there are only like 2 to 3 boxers that represent in the entire country of Japan, and he's one of them. So to me, it's more than just a fight between two champions. It's a fight between the representatives of two different styles, two different nations, two different cultures, and it's going to be an outstanding fight, because I don't see any similar fights on the horizon, even like in the near future, that can be compared from this standpoint to the fight that will take place in Japan.
Is this going to be a long fight in your view, Gennady, or do you think you can get to this guy and you can stop him like you have so many opponents you've faced in the past?
Of course, every fight is different. And taking into consideration the amount of time that was allowed to both of us to get ready for this fight, Murata says it's the fight of his life. He's been training for all his career to face me, and it makes it more interesting for me. And secondly, he's going to be in his home country, and as we know, at home, even the walls help. So It's and we are two very different fighters. So we'll see. Of course, if one of the fighters makes a mistake at some point, opens up, if there is an opportunity, then the opponent might seize that. So we have to be on guard. We have to get ready for something like that.
You mentioned Madison Square Garden. Obviously, I've been there with you twice in Las Vegas. Like you're saying, these legendary venues. We know you fought in the UK before against Cal Brook, obviously, but there's some big stadium fights to have here still. Chris Eubank is someone who's pursuing you. I know you've got your mind on Ryota Murata, but we often talk to him and he wants the biggest fights, and your name is on his lips all the time. You know how big a fan base there is in the UK for boxing. Could you consider coming for a big fight in the UK still in your career against someone like Eubank?
As you correctly pointed out, I'm fully concentrated on the upcoming fight against Murata. This is my focus right now. I indeed appreciate the big fan base that I have in the United Kingdom. It's one of the biggest groups of fans that support me. As for Chris Eubank, he, like many others, does that in order to for people to remind him about himself. At the same time, he's one of the few UK boxers that are still undefeated. You know, what happened just like recently, all the UK boxers, one after another, got beaten, even like stars. So this is his way to basically to be like on the radars. I don't think he needs to do that. And I'm don't get me wrong, I'm not in the position to respond to any, like every challenge, everybody who calls me out. We have to take a smart approach. If there is an offer on the table, something that is interesting, if there is a demand for a fight in the United Kingdom for a particular fight, that offer will certainly be considered.
This is a kind of big thing to say to you. In many ways, Gennady, I mean, all of us in boxing know that you beat Canelo in the first fight. We know you beat him, yeah. I had it 8-4 or 7-5 clear. And I don't have ever had a chance to say that to you, but it was clear. And I say it every time I talk about it.
Appreciate that.
In some ways, I feel like, and I don't know if you feel like, sometimes we feel like part of your legacy has been stolen, you know?
Yeah.
And that it's very important that we who are documenting boxing at the moment, make sure that's not forgotten in this period. Does it bother you that the wider world doesn't know your true legacy sometimes?
You know, I feel great. I feel young and strong, and I don't feel upset about it. On the other hand, what you said indeed took place. And of course, there are people who support fair play. And but unfortunately, life shows that it does not always happen. And my fights with Canelo demonstrated that. There are people who want to be honest, who don't want to live in this illusional world. But there are people who prefer to be delusional and who don't value the truth. People who like to have some hidden agenda, for example, or be a part of a fraud. Unfortunately, there are people like that, and there are unfortunately a bit too many, more than we would like to be. But honestly, it's not a big deal. I don't consider myself that I lost something as a result of it. And if that happened to me, it's just a part of my experience. It's it's part of who I am. And I tend to make conclusions out of it, and this is what it is.
What are you going to do then when you do stop boxing? And clearly, even though boxing is your life, it's just a sport for you. It's your profession, and that you're bigger than that in the person you are yourself, I assume.
The thoughts about finishing career come across my mind prior to each fight. And of course, there are certain factors that need to be considered every time. Mm-hmm. Health, family support, and team support, free time, all that helps me to stay active, to continue. And I'm happy that I'm able to continue my boxing career. It's hard to say what I'm going to do after I finish. I'm hungry for so many things. I'm optimistic, I'm open. And I would compare my boxing career as studies at the university. When I finish, I sort of like graduate and I start a new life, let's say begin a real life with the experience that I got, with the knowledge, with some financial support derived as a result of my career. I have my children that I love to spend time with and work with and entertain. And of course, I guess the best approach is not try to predict what might happen, especially during the current situation in the world, during the pandemic. It's very hard to predict, you know, the famous quote, you want to make God laugh, tell him about your plans. So that's my approach, and that's what I believe in.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Now, just switching fight cords for a split second away from boxing and into the world of MMA. I want to introduce you to a guy called Mohamed Mokhaev. If you are not into MMA, you may not have heard of this young man, but he is the youngest fighter now signed to the UFC. His story from Dagestan to Great Britain as a refugee, now to the UFC, is absolutely spectacular. And he gave me 15 minutes of his time this week to have a little bit of a chat about that journey.
From 2012 till 2014, I'm like, hey, why am I existing? I was thinking in my head, like, why am I existing in this world? What for? You know, I was in my head was going so much things. I'm like, what purpose I'm here for? You know, what to do? It's like I came from Russia, you know, from Dagestan, and in this country, don't know language, like a refugee, 5 pounds a day, and I'm like, hey. This like, of course, there's worse people living in worse situation than me, and even that I was thinking, imagine people even in worse situation, worse, why people struggling like this? And then I started competing, you know, to also I couldn't travel for 5 years. Imagine like you just stuck in the country, seeing your teammates like in the training, you're beating guys in the British Championships, but number two instead of number one traveling instead of you, and then he's ghost of World Championships, like European champion, and you're missing these opportunities. And for example, like there's ages like cadets, juniors, like under 23, and you're missing them because you don't have documents to compete. But you believe you like you're good enough to do this, and then when I believed, and then in like 2016-17, I believed if I went through that struggle, now I'm this point. I've got like little bit experience in my life, so it's getting only better. It's not getting worse. So I always believe that I can be then beating guys who is in UFC, who is was in UFC, who is like in other organizations, smashing them in the gym, and why I can do it. My mentality there, and my skill wise, I believed in myself. You know.
You've had a lot of life experience. For a 21-year-old guy, man, you've had a lot of life experience, as you just kind of briefly explained there. For people that don't know too much, 12 years of age, you left Dagestan, obviously came to the UK with your father as a refugee. And you kind of just pointed it out there that you initially went to Liverpool, yeah, in that refugee camp where you were there for, what, 28 days or so before they relocated you to Wigan. But you came without knowing English, surrounded by people obviously speaking a different language to you. You were a young boy. Alien country, to just go through that process in a really important time of your life. 12, becoming a teenager is a big thing in anybody's life, you know, to be going through all that in it at that time of your life must have been quite a daunting experience, Mo.
It was, especially like my father is 67 years old now. So imagine my father is like at that age, it's for him hard to learn language. Imagine all life he's lived in Russia and now he's like in UK. For him, it was hard. And for me, as a, we're not like 25 years old guys and like came, we have to like, we can't like, you know, like get into the life easier. But I'm young, my dad old, and we couldn't connect together in a head. So of course, I had problem with my father as well. And I had to go through. In the school, I had like some fights, not because like, in school, like I lived 10 years in UK, there's no such thing as a racism, you know, and I never see towards myself. I don't know about the other things. I never see. Only fights I get into, maybe like somebody like swear, I have different mentality, you know, like a man, you know, like I don't let anybody joke. And also I had inside things like, hey, you know, like problem in the house and stuff like this. So it was more psychology, I think. I was like maybe fighting and stuff. But then when I used all this energy towards my career, I didn't have to prove anybody, you know. I didn't have to prove. My results was talking for myself. And since 2016, I don't think, even 2015, last time I probably fought like in school maybe, like somewhere in the park or something. I don't know. And after this, I never got involved in anything. I didn't have to prove anybody. People know about me, and it was enough, you know.
I mean, a lot of people who have been following your career as an amateur know everything that happened in and around 2017 when there was a real threat of being deported. There was obviously a campaign where all the people that were following you to try and obviously appeal to the Home Office to say, listen, man, this is a guy that's winning junior championships for Great Britain. He shouldn't be getting deported. How stressful was that time for you?
It was stressful. Imagine from 2012 till 2017, you're sitting. To be honest, while I was in school, you know, school is 9:15. Every time I look from the window, I ask a postman sometimes, any letters, like I'm like in a jail, you know. I was like, hey, any letters? And then, like in 2017, we actually received the letter, you know. It was refusal. It was like, you got 14 days to go back to your country. So I had like good solicitor, he helped us, and we got indefinitely leave to remain, so it lasts for 5 years. So yeah. Actually in 2002 I can apply for the British citizenship, but I applied this year believing, even like all my people told me, listen, you cannot go against the law, apply earlier and stuff. I said, listen, I believe even my solicitor said, there's no risk, but you couldn't lose this, like application cost maybe £1,500. So he said, you lose this money. I said, listen, I will get this. So I applied and I got the UFC contract, and next day I've got my British citizenship. So mate, I believed it. Yeah, I believe it. You know?
Unbelievable. Listen, right? What's the bigger buzz? Be straight with me now. Obviously, your life ambition is to be a UFC fighter and go on to become the UFC world champion. That's going to happen, okay? Yeah. What was the bigger buzz? Getting that or the day after becoming a British citizen? And then, obviously, allowing that freedom now so you can travel and go to wherever you want to go in the world to go and get even better training that you've already been getting.
To be honest, British citizenship is something huge that I was waiting. Imagine every country I'm traveling, I see the British wrestling team, for example, they buy tickets, they go. Imagine me going from Manchester, have to book hotel in London. Imagine how many countries I travel, book hotel in London, give fingerprints for the passport, make application myself. Nobody did for me. Make application, bank statements, everything. Pay fees for the visa, waiting for the visa. For the last before I come to Bahrain, I was in Serbia for the World Championships wrestling, and I was waiting 4 weeks for the Serbian visa. Serbian, what is Serbia? You know, like, come on, 4 weeks. It's not America. And 4 weeks, and guess how many days they gave me visa for 6 days, and I paid like £140, and I'm like, hey, what is this? It's hard for me. You know, it's like I have to, like, 2 days before I travel to World Championships, I got the visa. I'm like, hey, I'm losing weight. I have a diet. I have a training, and I don't even know if I'm gonna go. I have to book tickets. I'm gonna lose money. British wrestling doesn't pay for us. You know, we pay for ourselves. So, before you apply for a visa, you must book hotel, buy tickets, and guess what? So many times I lost this, but now I'm like, hey, now I have. I know, I just have to book ticket and I'm going, you're actually going to book it for me. So it's good.
That's it, man. So change now, big time now. There's going to be plenty of trips to America. I've no doubt you're going to be fighting in America. Just tell me, man. March, yeah? March, possibility of UFC London. That's the one, isn't it? That's where we make the debut, isn't it?
Hopefully. I really want, really, I feel the arena, even if it be on like prelims. Listen, so many people will turn up. It's, you already seen maybe they think it's hype, but it's hype because of the results, not because I'm some like idiot or something like this. You know, it's hype of the because of my results, what I have done.
Who's getting smashed in London then?
Anyone, to be honest, anyone. You know? The higher the rankings, the better. They get closer, faster for me for the title.
We started the podcast with a fight promoter. We're going to finish the podcast with a fight promoter. Ben Shalom, a boxer, joined us on the show this week to discuss everything that they've got planned for December, January and February. But we started the conversation with a fight date switch. You all know that December the 11th was supposed to be Chris Eubank Jr. versus Liam Williams. Well, it's moved. Luckily, the fight's still on. It's Ben with the new dates.
The complications were Liam Williams had a bad shoulder injury against Andrade, and he was still sort of recovering at the time, and we were thinking, is he in, is he out? And we were pushing to try and keep it on December the 11th in Cardiff. It sold out. It sold so well. I think the Welsh fans were so up for it, and Liam was really up for it. And so we did everything to keep that date, but what we wanted to make sure is that if we had to delay, we didn't have to delay long. And so we got the all clear from the medical reports this week. So obviously delighted to have that fight back on. It was a fight that Sky were excited about, the fans were excited about, and we couldn't let that one go. And so really, really happy that that is back on January 29th. And I think, to be honest, Chris Eubank Jr. Is so frustrated by the situation and so frustrated against at Liam Williams. They almost add something even more to the fight now. And so, yeah, looking forward to that and just glad to have it back on.
Absolutely, mate. We love Spice. We love Needle. And I've no doubt that it will be Spicy and Needle on January 29th. What then happens with the rest of that December the 11th card? Because obviously one of the big talking points for British fight fans is that we were going to get to see Clarissa Shields come over and debut here in the UK on that particular day. Does that move as well, or are you keeping it on?
Yeah, no, Clarissa wanted to be on that card. She wanted to be on the... On, we think that's the biggest British domestic fight. It would have been of this year, so hopefully... let's see, it's a big start to next year. She wanted to be on that card. And so Clarissa will be chief support again. She'll be headlining chief support against Emma Cozin, defending her world title. So we can look forward to that as well. I think it's difficult. We really looked at, you know, we really like that December date. It's, as I say, it sold out so quickly, but it was a pleasure for the undercard to be on that show. And having spoken to Vidal Riley, having spoken to Clarissa Shields, having spoken to Steve Robinson, our heavyweight, they want to remain on a show like that. And and once we could turn it around that quickly, we decided that all the fighters will stay on that card.
Ben, I've got to ask you, you didn't mention, just for our listeners, that is still in Cardiff on January the 29th, yeah, first of all?
It is in Cardiff, yes.
Lovely. And I just wanted to ask you, the Badu Jack won last night against, who was it now, Samuel Cross. He got a second-round TKO. Last weekend, Richard Riakpor looked very good against Ola Dorodula, the Nigerian, the veteran Nigerian who fought for the world title before. I was a little critical in the studio. Spencer Oliver was stirring it up, saying Richard Riakpor was trying to find me in the building. Thankfully, I was in the studio.
What were you saying, Gareth?
What I was saying was, and I wasn't trying to take anything away from it. Stop it, Adam. Because this has gone on all week, and I'm not looking forward to running into Richard, a big RR, the Adonis-like man at cruiserweight. I was just wondering whether what I was critical of was not. It was more to, I wanted to see more combinations from him and going to head and body. We know he's not a vastly experienced fighter just now, but the fact that he is still in a very powerful position, winning the silver WBC silver cruiserweight title. He was brilliant afterwards with us on air. You know, he said that he knows he's still inexperienced. He needs to progress. I think Badu Jack would be a brilliant opponent for him. Are you looking at a next opponent for him down the line?
Yeah, we are. I think what you said is key, though, Gareth. He started fighting his professional debut at 25. And so, as you say, he almost got through on raw ability alone at the start. So with Angel Fernandez, he's almost having to learn a way to box. I think we saw with AJ, he can't lose himself by trying to do that. And that's something that we talk to him about as well, because he is still learning. He is still learning in terms of his boxing ability. But he's got the raw ingredients to speak to anyone that's sparred with him, the power, the size, the sheer tenacity, that he's got everything that it takes to be a serious contender in the cruiserweight division. He's 6'6", he's 31, and every time we see him, he is improving. He was out of the ring also for 18 months. And so I think the Dorodula fight, he was being patient. He wanted the rounds, but in the end, his power is such a force of nature that it does mean that a lot of his fights will end early. In terms of his next steps, I think we're so focused on world titles, Gareth, that's the focus. We're working with the governing bodies very closely. Obviously, we're interested to see what happened. I think Don King announced Makabu's going to defend his WBC world title very soon, and so we're interested to see what happens there. And so I think for Richard at his age, one day he's going to want to move up to heavyweight, and for him it's about getting as close as he can to a world title. And Lawrence Okoli, I was speaking to last week, and he wants to unify. So the division is very, very competitive, and there's big domestic fights, but I think Richard has sort of seen off that those guys, and he is looking for world level opposition now. And yes, Badu Jack is that, but whether it helps him in what his ambition is, I don't know.
Listen, I dug under your fingernails and put you on the spot last week about Williams and Eubank. I'm going to let Adam poke and tease you tonight. One other thing for me, I want to congratulate you on the progress that the boxer cards have made so far. Are you finding your feet now? Because there does really seem to be momentum. You came in, as fresh fish in the Shark Tank, which it really is promotionally. Are you finding your feet now?
I think so. I think our first show was on October the 2nd. It takes a while even for the fighters to realise what's going on and what platform they want to be on and who's serious and who's not. And fighters are seeing perhaps what we've done with Savannah Marshall very quickly, as you've just mentioned, what we're doing with Richard Riakpor. And we're starting to see big names wanting to be on Sky, obviously. Chris Eubank Jr. in that big Liam Williams fight. we want to put on big British domestic fights like Liam, you know, we saw Liam Taylor take on Avanesian, but more importantly, we've got Josh Taylor against Jack Cattrall as well in February. So we're starting to see a really sort of packed schedule coming together, and our roster with the likes of Caroline Dubois, Tasha Jonas, Larissa Shields, Adam Azim, it's growing all the time. And yeah, domestic fights are what we're interested in and the stars of the future. And as you said, we're starting to get a serious amount of momentum now. And yeah, it's exciting times for Boxer. It's exciting times for myself.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Ben, about domestic fights, my man. Because obviously we've just talked about the fight on December the 11th being pushed back to January 29th, which everybody's excited about. That's a great domestic fight. And there's a fight that a lot of people have been speaking about for a long period of time domestically, that we've all been clambering for and wanting to see. Now, I received an email from your lovely people earlier on today as one of these people in the media saying that there's a big press conference happening on Monday to announce a fight that Boxer are going to be putting on next year. Now, you know what I'm like, Ben. I do a bit of ratting around. I do a little bit of fishing here, there and everywhere. And I've come to the conclusion that there's a big domestic fight that you're going to announce on Monday. Can you shed any light on that big domestic fight that Boxer and yourself have managed to get on where other people have maybe failed?
It's no secret for the past 2 months we've been trying to make Amir Khan against Kell Brook. I think it's a fight that every boxing fan has wanted to see for years and years. And we have had, there's been a lot of competition. Every promoter has wanted it, no matter what's being said and what isn't being said. And I think we are very, very close now, and hopefully we'll announce that on Monday, and it will take place in February in Manchester. And so,
Well, it's funny because I was with Kell Brook's dad last night, Terry, and he was saying it was very close, but yeah, he didn't want to say, and I saw the press release, he didn't want to say it was definitely on. So you've got it over the line by the sound of it, and that's brilliant news.
Yes, I think I'll have to go along with what Terry says. We're very close. We expect to announce it
okay, early this week. All right, then. Listen, I don't want to put you on the spot, but is the press conference on Monday for Amir Khan Kell Brook?
I think you know the answer to that.
There might be some dotting of I's and crossing of T's to do over the next 24 hours, but is that the schedule on Monday to have a press conference to announce Amir Khan Kell Brook?
I think that's the idea.
I think
that's the idea. And I think, to be honest, it's the biggest fight I've ever been involved in. It's or will be involved in. It's the biggest, you know, fight Boxer have been involved in. For us, you know, Kell Brook fought for a world title last year and looked good up until being stopped by perhaps the pound-for-pound king. And, you know, these guys are ages 34, 35. You almost get that direct comparison to the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, and those guys were older, but the interest and, you know, the level, these guys would still compete extremely, you know, extremely well domestically. I think they're both at a similar age, similar point in their career, and if the fight does happen, which it looks very, very close to be happening now, it's something that I'm just can't believe that we're involved in.
Ooh, a little bit of breaking news on the old podcast. Obviously, that meant that me and Gareth had an immediate reaction for you. The news there, earlier on today, the majority of the boxing media received an email from Boxer saying that there's a big press conference happening in London on Monday. And as Ben just confirmed, that press conference, the plan for that press conference, I think it's only fair that we quote him properly. The plan for that press conference is for Amir Khan versus Kell Brook. And if that fight does finally go ahead, Gareth, I know this is going to sound a really outlandish thing, but if you exclude the heavyweight division, if you take away the heavyweight division and you try to think of other big domestic dust-ups that would generate big money, big interest, and I know that there's people going to come at me saying that it's past its sell-by date, it's 5 years too late, or whatever it may be. I disagree. I genuinely think that this is an evenly matched contest that could be classed as the biggest fight, British domestic fight, outside of the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, like you say, it could have happened 5 years ago when the two men were at their prime, but the whole... shooting match around both men is that they were big figures. They both went sideways to Kelfort, respectively. They fought Gennady Golovkin and Saul Canelo Alvarez, obviously Amir Khan in Vegas against Saul, and Kel in the UK against Gennady. They both went up two weight divisions to do that, and they haven't been the same since, if I'm honest. But there's still a huge British... I mean, the Twitter sphere is going mad here that we've put this out. It's great that Ben told us on Fight Night on TalkSport. The Twitter sphere will go mad over this because, as you say, there'll be people saying, why is this fight happening now? Why didn't we get it earlier on? Well, their egos got in the way, respective roots got in the way. This is a huge bragging rights fight for the end of both men's careers. They are past their prime. For me, it's a pick'em as well. It's a very difficult fight to call because Amir Khan's going to dominate early with his fast hand speed. And it's almost, when these two go into exchanges, we're going to be expecting a finish from one or the other. So it's an extraordinary contest. I think they've both got the same vulnerabilities now. And that's what makes it interesting,
yeah.
Adam.
Yeah, I completely agree. And what a coup as well for a young promoter coming into the game. There's been many people that have tried to get this on down the years. And for whatever reason, it's not happened, whether it's money, whether it's politics, whether it's ego, whatever it is, it hasn't happened. But now we've got a young lad that's, I say young lad, I'm being, he's more than a young lad. He's obviously a very clever young gentleman coming into this game, teaming up with Sky, the new era of Sky. And to get that fight on eventually, whether fight fans agree with me or not, it will pull numbers. I don't care what anybody says. There's two gentlemen there in that fight that do cross over. And that is key. There's not a lot of guys right now from Great Britain outside of that heavyweight division that are crossing over. We're looking for those new superstars. And hopefully, this is a wonderful opportunity for some people, maybe on that undercard of Amir Khan, Kell Brook, to really make a claim to be the next generation of superstar. I just think it's going to create so much interest on Monday at that press conference, should both of these gentlemen turn up. Let me tell you, they won't be backwards and coming forwards in what they've got to say, Gareth.
I cannot wait to see them next to each other. I have done several interviews with Kel, face-to-face with him, you know, up at the Winco Bank gym up in Sheffield, and his eyes go dark. There's a darkness about his eyes when he mentions Amir Khan. Like he says that he won't be able to sleep at night when his career's over if he hasn't got the Amir Khan fight. He genuinely doesn't hate the guy, but in boxing terms, he wants to put him to sleep. And there's a lot of venom there. I cannot wait to see the two men with each other, side by side, facing off on Monday in London. It's going to be extraordinary. I hope they both turn up.
Mm. Well, if anybody keeps up to date with either of the guys' social media, you'll know that they're both back in the gym. They're both training. Amir Khan's been spending a little bit of time with Terence Crawford. On last week's show, pre-Crawford Porter, you heard from Terence Crawford, and part of that interview at the end there, I did mention this particular fight with it being proposed, and he said, listen, Amir's in there, he's working hard, he's working with me, he's looking fast, he's looking his usual self, and he's bang up for this particular fight. And you know full well that Kell Brook will be bang up for this particular fight, because with all due respect to both these guys, I don't think there's going to be much after this. I think this is the final piece of the jigsaws, isn't it? I think they're going to be giving us one last dance. And what a wonderful opportunity it is for both of those guys against evenly matched opposition. And that's the key thing here. Both of those guys have been in with Terence Crawford where they were overmatched. Terence is the best on the planet. And maybe they are a little bit past their very best. But for themselves to face each other, I just think they're both at the right stage of their lives, right stage of their careers. And it then gives us, as fans, a 50-50 contest. And okay, it might not be prime for prime, but it's still 50-50. And we're going to get something, I think, very special.
I do love that prime for prime. That's a great expression. And look, I don't care what anyone says. There will be people. I mean, I can see it's a good fight for the radio, people are saying. Maybe. You know, there are people saying it's 5 years past its sell-by date. There's a lot of interest. There's a lot of interest in it already. Good, bad, and indifferent. But the thing is, Adam, both of these guys, we mentioned, you know, at the top of the show that Kell Brook had that incredible victory over Sean Porter. To put it in perspective, you know, all those years ago in Carson, California, a tremendous night, an amazing night. Amir Khan has changed the face for British Muslim sportsmen and women in this country since winning, what was it, a silver medal at the age of 17 in Athens in 2004. He's been an extraordinary advocate for the sport. Both of them have got massive mainstream appeal. And I think they will do their utmost to sell this fight in the right way. And it's a great swan song for both men. Look, if they produce a classic, we might get two fights out of them. We know that Eddie Hearn tried to get this fight on DAZN. So as you mentioned just there, it's a great coup for boxer Ben Shalom, the young promoter, and Sky, in my view, to put this fight on. Of course, it will be a pay-per-view, I imagine, and that'll be the big announcement on Monday as well.
There you go. The proposed date is February 19th in Manchester. Amir Khan, Kell Brook, press conference called for Monday. That is the proposal, and we will find out more on Monday from both those gentlemen and the promoter Ben Shalom, who was with us a moment or two ago. So there you have it. Make sure you come back to us next week for more of the biggest stories from the world of fight sport. Subscribe on iTunes and do it via the TalkSport website if you need an Android feed. We'll catch you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.